You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, the National Youth Poet Laureate Program is about to choose its next honoree. Jen White meets three of this year's finalists. Plus, you'll hear from U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, there are some things that are almost always hard to talk about. And our next guest says we're losing a lot of the institutional support systems that used to help us talk about them. That means it's up to us to choose to have or not to have conversations about things like death, sex, and money. And though they may be uncomfortable conversations, ultimately they could help us feel more connected to the people in our lives. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's a time in your life when you've had to have a difficult conversation, big or small? Did you do it or did you avoid it? Did it make a difference if you had that conversation? Do you tend to avoid these tough conversations? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Anna Sale is the creator and host of Death, Sex, and Money, the podcast from WNYC Studios, where she's been conducting interviews about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more since 2014. Before that, she covered politics for public radio for years, and her new book is called Let's Talk About Hard Things. Anna, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Well, you've got these universal issues that are going to affect our lives at some point or another, death, sex, money, and in the book, family and identity. Why are so many of us so bad and maybe so reluctant when it comes to talking about them?
Oh, I think there's lots of reasons. One reason is because we don't have a lot of practice. You know, a lot of us grow up being taught that bringing up hard or uncomfortable things is impolite. So it's something we have to learn how to do. And I also think that for a lot of us, we sort of avoid these conversations because we have the expectation that if we are going to talk about something hard, like someone's grief, or maybe the fact that, you know, you have more financial comfort than a close friend of yours, you avoid those conversations because it's not something that a conversation is going to fix or change. The hard thing is still going to be hard. But I make the argument in the book that, like, you don't have to have the expectation that talking about something, you have to have a solution or something that's going to make something not a problem anymore. Instead, when you have a conversation where you're sort of describing something tough that either you or your conversation is going, or your conversation partner is going through, if you describe it to each other, just kind of show up for each other, not pretend that something uncomfortable is not happening, then something else happens, which is, you know, you're able to support each other in a more meaningful way.
Beyond the fear that that conversation isn't going to magically fix everything, which, okay, I buy that there. There's a fear, I think this is a common Midwestern thing, I'll speak for myself, that I'm going to make it worse, that I'm going to say the wrong thing in a conversation, especially about somebody else's difficult situation, grief or what have you. How do we overcome that and avoid doing that too?
Oh, that's interesting that you think it's a Midwestern thing to be extra self-conscious and think that you're going to be destructive, not just that you're going to cause more problems. I'm from the Southern U.S. and we don't talk directly about tough things. I didn't grow up doing that in my family either. But I think that, like, it's all about showing your intent to the person you're talking to, you know, even saying, you know, a lot of us, unfortunately, have had more practice talking about grief lately because of how much loss there has been around us during this pandemic. And even saying, like, you know, I wish I could say something. I'm finding myself, like, wishing I could say something that would be a comfort to you. And I know there's nothing I can say that's going to fix this, but I just want you to know I'm thinking about you and I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, you know? But I think that, like, once you start that conversation, then that conversation about loss, say you're talking about someone who has died, you might have a conversation where you say, you know, I want to tell you what I remember about him. I want to tell you a memory I have, you know, or if it's someone who's lost someone you didn't know personally. One tip that someone told me recently that I really love, if someone says, oh, my father just passed away, If you don't know what to say, one thing you can say is, oh, what was his name? And then you can sort of see what happens. The person you're talking to, they're given an opening to honor and to remember out loud this person that they are thinking about. They're just having to think about silently because people don't know how to talk about it.
You gave a really good example in the book, in the section on death, a woman who had lost her husband in a horrible, tragic accident, and had gotten lots of non-helpful stuff, even for, I think, for professionals who kind of deal with these issues. And just kind of an acquaintance made a really good connection. Can you share that story?
Yeah, this is a woman named Megan Devine, who's a grief therapist herself. And she noted, like, among the people who were saying the wrong thing to her, she felt like after she lost her partner were fellow therapists, that they wanted to sort of, she felt like people were coming to them saying something that was going to be helpful so they would feel less helpless in the face of loss, instead of just saying, I'm really sorry. Like, instead of just being with her and validating the sadness and grief. And she told a story of being in a coffee shop line waiting for a coffee. And the owner of a local bookstore kind of walked up to her. She didn't know him well. And he just said two things. He said, you know, I didn't know your partner, Matt, well. I didn't know him well, but I was always impressed with him. And then he said, and you know, it's going to take, grief is something, it's going to take a lot longer to feel normal than you think it will, or something to that. So just kind of like nodding to her about having a familiarity with loss himself and that she didn't need to present that she was okay. And she found it really comforting just to have someone sort of say, wherever you are and whatever you're feeling right now is okay. You're going through a profound loss. And Megan, just think about it. Megan described, you know, she lost her partner suddenly. And she said, you know, I was in a period where every ounce of my energy was just trying to wrap its head around the shattering reality that my partner was gone. I had no energy. And I found that in these social interactions where people were trying to make me feel better, I was feeling that I needed to show that I was feeling better so that they would feel okay. Mm-hmm. And instead, you know, just be, if we can just try to be the friend who just doesn't take that energy, that instead can say something like, you know, I'm going to take your dog for a walk a couple of times a week. Here's how I'm going to help you, you know. Or just the friend who sends a text and says, you're on my mind. We don't have to talk. I just want to just tell me that you're okay. And she had that with a friend because a friend was worried about her, was worried how she was doing. And they developed this texting habit where Megan would just text back an asterisk to show that she was there, but just appreciating having time on her own.
We're talking to Anna Sale about her new book, Let's Talk About Hard Things. You can join in if you have a question, maybe a story of your own at 800-642-1234. Anna, one thing that can come up in many of the categories of your book, with family members or debates over money or in a tough relationship, the tough conversations where there's a grievance, maybe a mutual grievance. I have a problem with you. You have a problem with me. How do we start that conversation in a productive way?
Well, I think that, you know, that's a hard thing in conflict. When there's a conflict, there's something that you're not agreeing on. And usually when we go into one of those conversations, our intent is to make sure they see that we are right and they are wrong, you know, and that actually works against what is the most important thing in a hard conversation, which is really listening and making the person you're talking to feeling like you are making every effort to hear them, you know? And so I think that there are ways to have conversations about real disagreements, consequential disagreements, but to have them in such a way that the person you're talking to doesn't feel like you're trying to, you know, bulldoze over their point of view or just win an argument. And so a few tips that I think are helpful is to think about before you have that conversation. If you're sort of aware that there's going to be a disagreement, think about what you want out of this conversation. You know, is it to understand maybe a little bit more about where the other person is coming from? Is it important to you? Do you feel like they haven't really grappled with how you feel or what your position is? So think about that. And then when you start the conversation, really pay attention to your pacing and your tone and say something like, I've been thinking about this disagreement we have, or, you know, I've been thinking about this thing. I feel like we need to talk about this. Is now a good time? And that way you're sort of signaling a couple of things. You're signaling that you'd like to talk in a concentrated way about this impasse that you're having. You're also making sure that they're in a space, you know, either, you know, emotionally, or they've got the time and also the energy to do this with you right now. And you're sort of beginning it with a nod to, like, you know, what they need. So you're not just saying, I need to talk to you about this right now. You know, you're creating the conditions for an exchange. And that's really what I think is the goal of any hard conversation, even when you come to the end of it and realize, oh, we still disagree. This is not something we're going to agree on. That's okay. But you want to feel like when you have a hard conversation that you've created a sort of avenue for you both to receive and give new information, like to really understand in a deeper way where the other one is coming from.
We're talking to Anna Sale, creator and host of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money. Her new book is called Let's Talk About Hard Things. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Would you be willing to share the story of a hard conversation you've had or avoided or need to have? Do you have questions for our guest about how to do that? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue this conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Anna Sale. You may know her as host of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money. We're talking about her new book, Let's Talk About Hard Things. Anna, you were just talking about introducing that difficult conversation with a careful tone, a well-paced tone. You talk later in the book, I think in the identity section, with someone who had problems with anger and impulsively using that anger on people around him and how he tried to get that under control. I thought that was really interesting, and it could apply to a lot of emotions in tough conversations. Can you share some of what you learned?
Yeah, thanks for asking me about that story. You know, the way the book is put together is it's part memoir of me having hard conversations. And then I also talk to a lot of different kinds of people who'd gone through really different things to understand, you know, what they wish they had said in a hard conversation or what they did say and notice that it opened up a new way of communicating. And he was one of those people who really did try and put a lot of energy into communicating in a different way. And I put it, he's in the identity section because I think often when we talk about identity and who, how to talk about identity and who's in charge of talking about identity, we often focus on, you know, people of color, Black people, Latino people, to be the people to sort of say, here's how you should talk about this. I wanted to include a white guy who was a little older, who was really trying to with new self-awareness, change how he interacted. And as you said, you know, he had a pattern of, you know, he was had a lot of anger. And when he would get in conflict, what he learned as a boy growing up and then in workplaces to be a yeller, and to that would get his way, you know. That got results for him up to a point. And then he started having conversations with, you know, the HR departments and his bosses saying, like, look, you've got to change the way you're behaving. And it was also having some bad impacts on his personal life. He said at the end of his marriage, he realized he needed to change, or he was going to really not get to have a relationship with his kids. So he, you know, through, for him, it was related also to a history of addiction, but through recovery meetings and support meetings, he really learned that for him, what he wanted to do was become aware of when he became agitated, to pause. He has this little mantra. He says, pause when agitated. Because if he doesn't pause, he just goes into the patterns that he's been used to. He goes into the reactive, the yelling, the angry. So he tries to pause and have that self-awareness of like, okay, I need to slow down and I need to understand why I'm reacting this way. And just creating that pause, again, going back to pacing, gives him the space to sort of say, okay, what do I want to communicate here? How do I want to communicate it? And it doesn't always work, you know, old habits die hard. But he's learned now that when he does get angry, to quickly try to repair, and that is to take responsibility for how he behaved in a way that he didn't like. He has a line, he says something like, you know, I didn't talk to you in the way, I wasn't the person that I want to be, which I think is really taking responsibility. Like I wasn't the best version of myself. And I'm sorry, I apologize. And also here's how I'm going to do it differently. And so he does, you know, it's this process of sort of before it happens, trying to, again, get into that space of allowing for a slow, listening driven exchange. And when it doesn't happen, to acknowledge it and to acknowledge his role in it and to try to repair and say, this is not how I want to communicate.
We're talking to Anna Sale about her new book, Let's Talk About Hard Things. The Power of the Pause, Anna, you give the advice in having conversations to, you know, let silence hang there sometimes and let people. And this is hard for me. I'm a live radio person. Silence is my enemy on the job. Talk about why in these hard conversations that's so important.
Well, you know that like when there's a gap in the conversation, it creates a little tension, you know, and all of our instincts, whether we're a radio host or not, is to just jump in. Like but what I find as an interviewer and in my life, I've tried to do this more in my personal life. If someone finishes a thought and then they're pausing and you're like, maybe they have more to say. If you just wait just another beat, they're going to feel that pressure to fill the space too. And what I think is so interesting is often when they come in with that next thought, it's layering in another layer of complexity or nuance or ambivalence. It's just a little messier often. And I really like that because it's an acknowledgement that stuff is not all figured out, you know? And when someone shares that second beat with you, you get to know them a little bit more, you know, instead of them presenting, here's what I've figured out, you know, finished, T's crossed and I's dotted. You then hear a little bit more about the process or what's not totally worked out. And it makes what's sort of an interesting thing is when someone is going into those second beats and third beats of saying things out loud that in the regular pitter patter of chit chat would sort of be crowded out, when someone is having that experience of kind of really talking and sharing, it feels that they notice how good it feels to be listened to, and then they will share more. And so it's this way of really conferring like respect and dignity to the person to just like make room for them to tell you more.
And Anna, I want to take a couple minutes to talk about when talking stops. You write about your first marriage, and you give other examples of this where there's a point where maybe you realize talking more isn't the answer. How do we realize we're at that point?
Yeah, I wanted to end my book, Let's Talk About Hard Things, with the idea of when to stop talking, you know, because I do think, you know, there is definitely a point where you've done it. You've done it enough. You've circled back around. You've tried to figure out the thing, and you can dig and dig and dig. And sometimes in my experience, in the end of my first marriage, I found that I thought if we just kept talking, we would uncover some fix. And I felt like we weren't doing it right, that we were not uncovering the fix for our marriage. And it was only in writing that part of the book, it's been more than 10 years, that I really recognized, like, oh, we did the hard conversations in the way that we did a good job. You know, they were really sad conversations, because what we were uncovering was that I wanted our life to look one way. I wanted a house. I wanted to have a family. I wanted to have kids. And my ex, what he wanted had really changed. He had become an artist. He was in film school, and he was imagining a future where he didn't have those sorts of like grounding obligations. He wanted adventure and travel. And that was a real mismatch. And we were both pretty clear. We became more clear the more we talked about it. But they were hard and sad conversations, because we were having to admit that our marriage wasn't going to last forever. But sometimes that's how where hard conversations lead you. They lead you to new information that might not be pleasant. It might not but be the outcome you wanted. But it's what it is. And hard conversations help you look at that. And so when you get to that place at the end of a period of having hard conversations, it's okay to just say, okay, we've talked about this enough. And when you stop talking, then there's room for everything else that might come next.
We have just a few moments left. Anna, do we get better? You've done this a lot. You've had a lot of hard conversations or heard them from a lot of people. Is this a muscle? Can we exercise it and get better at it?
You know, what we can get better at is that feeling of discomfort. You know, the more you practice kind of saying, I don't know how you see it, but this is what I'm going through. Practicing that feeling of being vulnerable, or practicing that feeling of asking someone, you know, the slightly more open conversation than you would in the kind of like regular small talk exchange. When you get more comfortable in that space of just kind of, whoa, where's this conversation going to go? It gets easier. It gets easier to do, because it's not so scary. You know, with more practice, they become a lot less scary.
Anna, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anna Sale is the creator and host of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money. We talked to her today about her new book. It's called Let's Talk About Hard Things. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 7:30, the emerald ash borer has devastated trees in Wisconsin and around the country, but help might be on the way from a fungus. Find out more tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show. Up next is news, then the U.S. birth rate declined for the sixth year in a row last year. We'll find out how the pandemic impacted that. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.